Good morning. How's everyone doing this morning? Good. It's good to see you. And up there too. And in there too. All right. Here we're going to do the pew Bible thing, all right? But there's a double part. So if you have a Bible in front of you, in there, we are on page 384 today. Out of, no, I wasn't doing that. Hey, but you can grab a bookmark. You might, whoa, look at that. Don't do that with it. You can grab a bookmark off the chair and just stick it right in there. Look at that, hey? And if you want, just stick the cross up like that. No, this is great. We're giving away bookmarks with all the Bibles that we're giving away now. And so there's one for each of you on there too. And so it's got our church name. Love God, love people, love the church. So it's sweet. So you can put one in there, Psalm 3. If you've got more than one bookmark, then, you know, you can stick one in 2 Samuel, one in Romans. But anyway, you know, just maybe don't steal other people's bookmarks. So I wasn't here last weekend. I was in Smithers along with several people in the room. If you were in Smithers last weekend with me, put your hand up, give a woot woot. Look at them all. Yeah. This was like the biggest crew in since I've been here, at least, that we've taken up to snow camp. There were 39 teens who came from our church or youth group. Some of them wouldn't be a part of this church, but part of our youth group, who came out to snow camp. It was amazing. I think there were 130 teens all together. It was really sweet. And so we do this every year in Smithers at Mountain View Assembly, which is a church that we're related to. And yeah, so we do the snow camp. It's a weekend. We had Mark Caldwell this year, who is a part of our BC Yukon district in the PAOC, which is our denomination. And so he came up, and he's got years and years of ministry. And he was just amazing. He spoke so powerfully into the lives of the youth and the leaders. He was boom, boom, boom. Yeah, he just went straight up. And so it was really, really powerful. Lots of time of prayer. And one of the sweetest things about these weekends is Tuesday, then we come back and it's youth group. We also went skiing and snowboarding, which was really fun. It was great. It's always a blast. I think the people who were down below played some dodgeball, who didn't come up the mountain. Anyway, we had a great time. But yeah, coming home from these weekends, Tuesday then, we have a night. And so we play three songs at the beginning of our youth night. And then it's at least an hour of just youth and leaders coming up and sharing testimony. Lots of testimonies, stories from snow camp of what God did, how he changed them, how he said, hey, look at this part. You need to let that go. A lot of the theme was hey, you're a child of God. You're a son or daughter of God. That's your identity. And so these kind of things that we attach to ourselves as labels, they're really dead and they're bringing us down. So many people said, hey, I just need to let that go this weekend. Or people said, hey, I've been kind of keeping God at arm's length and I'm coming to him. So it was such a powerful weekend. And I love those nights after, the youth night after these weekends or camps or conferences. We always have some time just for the youth to share. And so it was amazing. So I share all that, I guess, to say thank you for being a part of this. I know lots of you were at the dessert auction, raising support for this weekend. I know some of you sponsored youth to go, and so thanks so much. These weekends are, super significant, just to intentionally take time away to say, hey, we're going to seek God together. And So you're on, I lost my page. Oh, good thing I got a bookmark. on page 384 of your pew Bible. You know, I've been here for 4 years now in Terrace at TPA, and I think it's probably time to share some of my past with you. It's going to be good. So, first of all, I was homeschooled. So here we go. I was also part of a musical homeschool theater group. Anyway, no, I'm going tangent. One of the things my friends and I used to love to do was film videos, just for fun. See, that's why I had to give the homeschool preface, because it's kind of weird. We would just film videos. I remember when Lord of the Rings came out, it was called the Slim Cam, and you could put a whole VHS in it. shot it record directly to VHS. We recorded a version of the Fellowship of the Ring right directly onto VHS. Then we got, you know, actual camcorders, mini DVs. We would record stuff. If it was like a time away, like a retreat, conference, whatever, we would film it and we'd put together a compilation video. It was good fun. And then it was one time my brother was house sitting for one of our friends' families. They were away, and we decided let's film a lip sync video. And so we did. And I won't tell you the name of them, so you can't find them online. But this became a thing we did. We would film these lip sync videos to tracks, and then we would edit them later. And they were honestly pretty cool, and we had some pretty good moves. But one time we were at this same friend's house, and we were filming one of these videos downstairs in the basement. And I remember my brother had this dress up room. You know, somebody will have a dress up closet. They had like a dress up room, and he had like this black pleather jacket on, and he was playing guitar, and it was in a really rock and roll song. And I remember him like he was leaning against the wall of the hallway, looking at the camera, singing, and he was up and down, and then finish the take, cut, and we look at the wall, and there's just this black mark where Jared's been going up and down, and this was like a beautiful house. They kept it really clean. We were like, oh, and so we all, I think there were like six guys, we all hide. I remember like a few people hiding in the behind the couch. I think it was my one friend's cousin who was there, and he hid in the bathtub, like behind the shower curtain, as the friend goes and gets his mom, and she comes downstairs. And actually, at the same house, I remember during the time that my brother was house sitting, our friend's mom had this beautiful fruit stand, and it wasn't a cutting board, but we kind of treated it like a cutting board, and we cut our oranges on it. That were sitting on it, I mean, and then we took them off, and behold, there were knife marks all over the top. And so we went to the grocery store and bought a pineapple. I think our instinct is when we do something wrong is we want to hide. We want to cover it up. We want to say, hey, I don't want you to catch it, whether it's the black stains on the wall or the pineapple on the fruit stand. And we, way back in December and then January, I was looking at a couple of the first Psalms in the Bible, Psalm 1 and 2, that kind of function as these introductory Psalms. And I said, we're going to also look at Psalm 3. And so here we are, we're going to look at Psalm 3, which is on page 384 in the Pew Bible. And David shows us a different way. David has done wrong. He has actually gotten in trouble. He's faced some consequences. But he doesn't try to hide. Not anymore, at least. Maybe there's some of that in the process. Instead, he turns to God. He turns to Yahweh for refuge. And he's filled with confidence that Yahweh is going to deliver him, ultimately. So let's read Psalm 3. It says, a psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom. Yahweh, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you, Yahweh, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. I call out to Yahweh, and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because Yahweh sustains me. I will not fear, though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Arise, Yahweh, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked. From Yahweh comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. The opening words are this, a psalm of David when he fled from his son, Absalom. Yahweh, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. We hear these taunts from David's enemies. There's no salvation from God for this guy. And the taunts make sense because the psalm has just said it's a psalm of David when he's running away from his son, Absalom. So I did kind of mention another bookmark in 2 Samuel. You can turn there if you'd like. It will be on the screen as well. 2 Samuel 12. This is some of the story that has led up to this running away from Absalom. David has just committed his infamous crime. The armies have gone out to war, and he has seen a lady bathing on the rooftop. He has said, "Who is that?" And his servants have said, "Well, that's Bathsheba. She's the wife of Uriah the Hittite, one of your soldiers." And he said, "Well, bring her to me." His servants come, bring Bathsheba to King David, and he sleeps with her, and they conceive in that moment, at which David says, "What am I going to do now? Uriah, her husband, is out fighting my battles. I'm going to bring him home." And he brings Uriah and says, "Hey, how's the battle going? You deserve a break. Go home, sleep with your wife." And Uriah says, "Can't do that. All the other soldiers are out there fighting the battle. How could I do that?" And he sleeps on the porch. And then David finally sends a letter back with Uriah to Joab, his commander, to say, "Hey, put Uriah at the front lines where he's going to get killed." It's not good stuff. I think Pastor Rob mentioned it briefly last week, talking about misuse of power. Then the prophet Nathan comes to the king, and he tells him this story. And David sees the evil in the story, but the story actually represents what he's just done. And then Nathan says this in 2 Samuel 12, 9. "Why did you despise the word of Yahweh by doing what is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your own. This is what Yahweh says. Out of your own household, I'm going to bring calamity on you. Before your very eyes, I will take your wives and give them to one who is close to you, and he will sleep with your wives in broad daylight. You did it in secret, but I will do this thing in broad daylight before all Israel." Well, as soon as this story is finished, they talk about how the battle was completed and finished and everything. Then we start to follow the story of David's son, Absalom. David's son, Absalom, has a sister, Tamar, and she is raped by Absalom's half-brother. Absalom is justifiably angry, and he goes and murders his half-brother. At that point, David then banishes Absalom. But after a time, he misses his son, and he has mercy and brings him back to Jerusalem, where he is. And it's at that point that Absalom starts to campaign. He's really quite a politician. He says, "Hey, if only there were, if I were appointed judge in the land, I could help you in your grievances." And he wins people's hearts. Enough so that finally he has a group around him that they come to him and they anoint him king. And then David says, "All right," he brings his most loyal followers and says, we're gonna leave." And this, David's done this before he was king, lived out in the bush, running in the wilderness, and he does it again. And he goes and he's on the run from his son Absalom, who has taken his throne. And as he flees and Absalom comes into the palace, Absalom says, I'm sorry, this is not definitely G-rated this morning, but this is the story. Absalom says to Ahithophel, his counselor, "Give us your advice, what should we do?" And Ahithophel answered, "Sleep with your father's concubines, whom he left to take care of the palace. Then all Israel will hear that you've made yourself obnoxious to your father, and the hands of everyone with you will be more resolute." So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and he slept with his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. This is the story. And now as David is running away, kind of meanwhile, a few verses earlier in 2 Samuel 16:5, as King David approached Bahurim, a man from the same clan as Saul's family. Saul had been the king prior to David. He came out from there. His name was Shimei, son of Gera, and he cursed as he came out. He pelted David and all the king's officials with stones, though all the troops and the special guard were on David's right and left. And as he cursed, Shimei said, get out, you murderer, you scoundrel. Yahweh has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. Yahweh has given the kingdom into the hands of your son Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a murderer. Then Abishai, son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head. But the king said, what does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he is cursing because Yahweh said to him, curse David, who can ask, why do you do this? David then said to Abishai and all his officials, my son, my own flesh and blood, is trying to kill me. How much more than this Benjamite? Leave him alone. Let him curse, for Yahweh has told him to. It may be that Yahweh will look upon my misery and restore to me his covenant blessing instead of his curse today. Shimei curses David for his violence against Saul's house. And if we know the story, that's not really a valid accusation. David's been very good to Saul's house. But David knows also that his present circumstance is a direct result of his sin against Bathsheba and Uriah. David's experiencing the consequences of his sin. But he doesn't give up hope. He doesn't hide or run away from God. Rather, he turns toward God. As he says to his soldiers, it may be that Yahweh will look upon my misery and restore to me his covenant blessing instead of his curse today. David doesn't listen to the many voices, including Shimei, that would say there's no deliverance for him. Instead, he takes refuge from the taunts of the many in Yahweh himself, the one who has disciplined him, the one who has said there's going to be consequences, yet David runs to him. And in Psalm 3, this is the setting. And we see David doing this with some really strong conviction. So let's just read the next couple of verses, verses 3 and 4. But you, Yahweh, David says, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. I call out to Yahweh and he answers me from his holy mountain. It's kind of shocking, I think, for us to hear David's response, considering the circumstances. Like, are you sure, David? Because I'm pretty sure, like, God's bringing this on you. That's what Nathan said. But that's what David does. He says, no, I'm going to take refuge in Yahweh, nonetheless. And it fits with David's response so far. Yes, at first, he definitely worked very hard to cover up his actions from the public. But when he's confronted with his sin by the prophet Nathan, he immediately repents. He acknowledges his sin. When he fears he's going to lose his child as a result, he petitions God. He doesn't run away. He says, God, he fasts and prays. When he does lose this child, he submits to God's will. He still doesn't run away. And now as David flees from Absalom, we hear him again drawing near to God, not running away from him. Even though this turn of events is part of what God told David the consequences of his sin would be, David doesn't try to run away. He accepts the consequences. He runs away from Absalom, but he also trusts that as he takes refuge in God, God will deliver him. And David also has this other peace. See, when he repents to the prophet Nathan, he gets another word from Nathan. This is in 2 Samuel 12:13. Then David said to Nathan, I've sinned against Yahweh. Nathan replied, Yahweh has taken away your sin. You're not going to die. There are some tragic consequences, but David also has this word. Yahweh has taken away your sin. You have forgiveness. David has turned toward God, not away from him, and God has taken away his sin. We looked at Psalm 2 in January, and again, the psalm closes, blessed are all who take refuge in him. And David has received this blessing. And so David's confident as he continues to take refuge in Yahweh, Yahweh will be a secure refuge. This is the first thing he says about God. Yahweh is his shield, his refuge. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. He is my shield. And then he goes on to say this. He is my glory. He is the one who lifts my head high. That imagery is used a couple other times in the Psalms, and it's this picture of exaltation and victory. He's lifting my head high. He is going to get me out of this. He is going to give me victory. David's confident that God is his refuge, his glory, and his victory. Again, that doesn't mean that David won't have to undergo any consequences due to his behavior. Given the head of the psalm, again, we know he currently is going through this. It's not just a natural outcome, it's a divinely sanctioned one. He's under Yahweh's discipline, but he doesn't despair. He knows also that Yahweh has taken away his sin. So he continues to take refuge in Yahweh, trusting that he ultimately is the only one who can really give him refuge, who can truly exalt him and give him victory. David's response fits with the prophet Hosea, who would live, you know, generations later. In Hosea chapter 6, verse 1, where this is what Hosea says. He says, "Come, let us return to Yahweh. He has torn us to pieces, but he will heal us. He has injured us, but he will bind up our wounds." Yes, we've received this discipline. Don't run away. Run towards. He is the one who heals, who restores, who forgives. God may discipline, he may bring things, consequences on our lives, but David knew an important truth. God's discipline isn't intended to drive us away from him. It's intended to bring us back to him. In the New Testament, in the letter of the Hebrews, chapter 12, it says this, "Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children." What children aren't disciplined by their father? If you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you're not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we've all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while, as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in his holiness. Love that verse. David's enemies taunted. They were sure there was no hope for him. Do you know what this guy did? But David knew that Yahweh had taken away his sin. He knew for sure that what he was going through was a result of what he had done, but he also knew that he had repented and he had taken refuge in Yahweh, and that because of that, he, and not his taunters, was the one who ultimately had the protection and support of Yahweh. And because of this, he has this confidence to cry out to Yahweh for help, for deliverance, the very thing that his enemy said he wouldn't have, he couldn't have. His confidence isn't based on his own righteousness, but simply because he has repented, submitted to Yahweh. Yahweh is his shield. Yahweh is his glory. Yahweh is the one who lifts his head. And so he cries out to Yahweh for help, for deliverance. And his confidence isn't put to shame. Yahweh answers. As verse 4 says, "I call out to Yahweh, and he answers me from his holy mountain." It goes on, verse 5 and 6, "I lie down and sleep. I wake again because Yahweh sustains me. I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side." Just in the middle of the psalm, David's like, "I'm going to have a nap. I'm going to lie down and sleep and awake again because Yahweh sustains me." His confidence that Yahweh is on his side is so great that he's not afraid of his enemies. He can rest. He's confident. Yahweh's going to take care of him. Again, I think it's kind of striking, right? David isn't up at night wondering if God really will deliver him or if his enemies might be right. Of course, in some ways, his enemies are right about his sin, but David's more than confident that they're not right about there being no salvation for David. Sometimes we sing songs about God being for us. You know, you might be familiar with some of those lyrics. Sometimes I have a hard time with those songs because I'm a little bit worried that they might lead us in this wrong direction, that, you know, everything we do is somehow sanctioned by God. Like, I can do whatever I want and God's backing my action. But in a certain sense, the words, God is for you, God is for me, are very powerfully true. It's not that God backs whatever we do. We're not the team captain and God's the cheerleader. But if we take refuge in him, then we're on his team. And we can have great confidence that he'll take care of us, not as our servant, but as our master. And that confidence can stand no matter what happens, no matter what other people say, so long as we're taking refuge in God. In Romans 8 in the New Testament, Paul writes the words that these songs are based on in Romans 8, verse 31. What then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? A few verses later, Paul elaborates on this in verse 35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it's written, for your sake, we face death all day long. We're considered as sheep to be slaughtered. No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. The one who takes refuge in Jesus can have great confidence, no matter what happens, that God is for you in a very deep way, for your holiness. That is, Paul has written a few verses earlier in verse 28, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. This is David's confidence. No matter what, he doesn't need to fear. His sin is done away with. Yeah, he's on the run. He's living in caves again. He knows his son's on his tail. But he can have confidence. If he's been punished, he's also received forgiveness. He's in God's hands, and those are good hands to be in. This last weekend, I felt a little bit like tens of thousands were assailing me on every side. It started kind of in the lead up to snow camp. My stomach was bothering me the week before, kind of disconcerted about it. I had a toothache randomly. Then our drains all backed up and then flooded into our crawl space. Then I think it was Thursday night, Jed starts throwing up. Okay, this is an attack. Going into snow camp. Friday morning, trying to figure out the drain. Just gets worse Friday morning. We can't actually use any of our drains in our whole house. So last minute, we're like, all right, we're just bringing everyone to Smithers. I'm bringing Sarah and the kids. We're all going. So we pack everything up last minute. Snow camp was amazing, as I shared a little bit. But there was still some chaos, finding my family a place to stay. Jed throwing up again. It's crazy. In the van. And then two nights of very little sleep. And we come home to a house that still doesn't drain. And all the ways, you know, I felt encouraged and challenged at snow camp. I suddenly felt very overwhelmed, overtired, grumpy, just not up for it. Monday night, I finally had a few minutes to kind of process some of the last weekend. And I could come back to this. God's ultimately for me. He's not against me. I'm in good hands. What shall separate me from the love of Christ? Shall stomach pain or toothache or broken drains or lack of sleep? No. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because Yahweh sustains me. I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. The confidence of Psalm 3 is a confidence in Yahweh's protection and support, even in the midst of chaos and opposition. David's life was turned upside down. He was on the run. He was reaping the consequences of his actions. Yet he had so much confidence in Yahweh's protection and support. He wasn't afraid. He knew that God was for him. By the way, everything is back in order. I think we're through this bug. Some good friends help us out, and the drains are all working. Oh, it's amazing. You don't know how much water, you don't realize how much water you use. And how nice that is. So thank God and thank friends. Let's read the last couple verses. Verse 7 of Psalm 3. Arise, Yahweh, deliver me, my God, strike all my enemies on the jaw, break the teeth of the wicked. From Yahweh comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. The psalm ends by responding directly to the taunts that the psalm began with. David asks Yahweh for deliverance, for victory. And he assures readers that Yahweh is the one whom deliverance comes from. There is, in fact, deliverance with God for David. And he finishes by blessing all of Yahweh's people in his name. In the end, the only important thing is our relationship with Yahweh, with God. It's not about the taunts of the many, it's about the refuge of the one. And he is a God who blesses all who take refuge in him. David's response is one that we also can have, to find forgiveness from our sins and refuge and deliverance from God, to have confidence that God is for us and will protect us and support us in the midst of chaos and opposition. It might be rude not to finish the story with David. If you don't know it, I just want to leave a cliffhanger. He is on the run for a while. He takes refuge in this fortress in the wilderness. Armies of Absalom come. David says, don't kill Absalom. Joab says, meh, I'm going to kill Absalom. Kills Absalom. So there's lots of drama in the story. Ultimately, though, David is restored to the throne. His hopes, his trust in Yahweh is not ill-founded. He receives the victory and the lifting of his head again from his God. So, what do we do with all this? David's sin against Bathsheba and Uriah was a horrible crime. I mean, yeah, Pastor Rob was talking about misuse of power last week. I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. He uses his power to commit adultery. He then uses his power to try to cover it up. Finally, he uses his power to kill off her husband. Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. Makes sense. And I don't know your story, but wherever you're at today, I want to invite you to come to Jesus. He died for you, for your sin. There's no sin that's too great that it would disqualify you. As Nathan said to David, I say to you this morning, if you turn toward God instead of away from him, he's taken away your sin through the cross, through Jesus' death for your sin, his resurrection to give you hope that you can die to your sins and live to Christ. It doesn't mean there won't be consequences to things you've done, but it means that you can know that God is for you in that deepest sense, and be given strength in all things, that nothing can separate you from the love of Jesus. Don't run from the one you've offended. Don't run from the one who's disciplining you. Run to him this morning. He is for you in a way you can hardly comprehend. He's for you for your good, that you might share in his holiness. He is for you to make you the you he made you to be, his creation, his child. He may oppose you at times, as he did David, but he is deeply for you. What then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? God sent his son Jesus to give his life for you, to bring you back to his life. So this morning, whether for the first time or as a coming back to God, cry out to him. That's what David says. I cry out to him and he answers. Cry out to him, he'll answer. He sees you and cares for you. He loves to deliver those who cry out to him. Cry out to him this morning. Come to him. Don't run from him. Come to him. And some of us, like myself, this last weekend, I've begun to let our circumstances define how confident we feel in God's presence and power in our lives. Might be past sins, might just be present circumstances, might be a combo. But he's taken away your sin, and there's no circumstance that could separate you from his love. All we need to do in sin and circumstance is just to turn toward Jesus. Not hide, not run away, not try to figure it all out on our own. Just turn toward him. And then we don't need to fear. Even though tens of thousands assail us, even though things might feel chaotic, we can know that God is for us. We can have confidence in him. The same kind of confidence in Psalm 3. So why don't we pray together to close. Jesus, thank you for the power in this Psalm of David that, that while he was experiencing the consequences of his really horrible sin, that he knew that he had turned toward you and found repentance, found forgiveness. Thank you that each of us can do that. Jesus, you cared enough about us doing that, that you came. You died for us. You died for our sins. You took them all the way to the grave, and you came up from the grave to promise new life, to send your spirit in us, to make us new. So, Father, move our hearts by that spirit. Where maybe some of us are hiding or running away, help us turn toward you, trust you. Where maybe some of us are feeling overwhelmed, feeling unsure, are you for us? Let's turn toward you. Know your provision and regain the confidence that you are for us. Who can be against us? We praise you, God. Thank you, Jesus.